Welcome back to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr., and I am speaking with Dr. Joseph Hobbs, pioneer of pioneers, and this is where we get the opportunity, Dr. Hobbs, to find out why I keep calling you pioneer of pioneers. And it has to do with something that you were sharing with me earlier, and you've really begun to tap into that when you talked about what was happening with the way that the medical practice was developing. But more to the point, you were sharing with me earlier that family medicine / primary care, something that we've been reading about quite a bit in the news quite a bit the last several years, something that we're kind of short on now. This isn't the first time we've been here.
Right.
Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, when I entered medical school, I had all these ideas about what medicine was going to be about, and although Marcus Welby had not played on radio yet, on television yet, mm-hmm. it's kind of that kind of concept of the personal physician, the physician of first contact, the physician that took care of the entire family. I mean, that's kind of the way that I expected things to be. But when I got to the medical college, what I realized is that the medical college of Georgia was a very highly specialized environment, and its primary care emphasis was very, very small at that point in time. And so therein was a challenge because I wanted to be a primary care physician. That's what I wanted to be. Even though Claude Starr Wright was a hematologist-oncologist, as I watched him practice, he was a primary care doctor. I mean, the way that he engaged those patients their entire lives, that's what I wanted to do. And at that point in our environment, a very small effort was being put together because of some state pressure with regards to the needs of our workforce, because the primary care physicians were declining substantially in Georgia. And so public medical school was asked to respond to that. And so they built a very, very small, insignificant Department of Family Medicine. They made a crucial mistake, though. It's when they hired the group of people who were their original faculty there. And these were people who just were not willing to work in a box. What they wanted to do was to build, experiment, and trying to find ways to incorporate primary care education into a very subspecialized academic environment. These were people who had good teaching skills, they had scholarship skills, they had clinical care skills, and they wanted to bring all that to bear in that setting. And so slowly over years, we began to experiment with ways in which we could bring primary care services into that setting, and more importantly, how we could build an educational enterprise that worked for students and gave them a good look of what the possibilities could be for primary care, and hopefully to try to find ways to recruit more of them to come into the disciplines of primary care and, for us specifically, family medicine. Mm-hmm. We were able to get external funding from the federal government. I would imagine that over the course of years, probably 10 $12 million worth of extra funding to begin to build enterprises. We were able to develop unique educational platforms that were new, different than anybody else had done within the entire nation. And not only were we able to build them, we were able to build them, study them, report on them, present on them, and actually became consultants to many other colleges across the country regarding how do you integrate primary care education into an academic environment of an academic health center. Now, those were exciting times for us because every day that we walked into work, the environment was different than the way it was yesterday. I mean, it was different. I mean, you could look at a week and you could not project what was going to happen in that week because we were in a process of building and changing and experimenting with things and things like this. And it made this environment something exciting from an educational and a clinical care standpoint, a place exciting to be in. Over the course of my career, I've gotten multiple offers to leave and go someplace else just because of the notoriety of some of the things that I and my colleagues, and I have to emphasize my colleagues, because I'm a product of all of that hard work that was done by my colleagues, what they did. But there was always something else that popped up, opportunities that popped up right there at the medical college that kept me there. But at the same time, we were able to have opportunities to look at our work there in ways that we could share that with the rest of the country. So in national organizations, I've had the opportunity to serve as president of the Society of Teachers of Family Medicine. This is a collection of all of the family medicine teachers across the country in academic health centers and community settings that come together to discuss educational innovations, research innovations, and things of this nature. Also have had the opportunity to serve as the president of the departments of family medicine, of the academic departments of family medicine, it's called the ADFM, which is the Association of Departments of Family Medicine. Mm-hmm. These are all of the academic programs in family medicine across the country. There's about 122 of them, and served as president for that. The reason that that occurred, it occurred because of the hard work that my colleagues did here to be able to demonstrate that we could create an academic environment in family medicine that resonated with students, that produced the sorts of results that we needed it to produce, recruited young people to this environment, and all of those things were evidences that other people took to their institutions and actually recreated that. So although here, our energy has also been all over because we've had impact on tons of different medical schools across the country just because of what we were able to accomplish here. The other thing was the environment here permitted us to do the experimentation, permitted us an opportunity to say that because it hasn't been done doesn't mean that it can't be done. That ability to be innovative, that ability to research, that ability to try something new and not be satisfied with the way that the world is, all of those things was the environment, or and still is the environment, that has kept me here for an entire career as opposed to going someplace else.
That freedom to innovate.
Freedom to innovate, the freedom to think beyond the box, the freedom to say that this is not good enough, we can do better, and things of this sort. And that's a challenging set of circumstances, even in an academic community, because still there are boxes and you know, and cylinders and silos and things like this that don't let you do those sorts of things. But I think as a new specialty, as a new discipline, building a new department, we were given kind of that freedom and flexibility to build, to experiment, and things of this nature. And that's the reason that I think that we have fared well, and the reason that we've had some very, very important people who have been a part of that environment, and they've devoted their entire careers to activities there at the Medical College of Georgia.
And at least two things, Dr. House, that you shared with us gave rise to this. One was passion. Yourself and others just had a passion for providing primary care to patients so that it wasn't all about subspecialties that they'd have to deal with when it came to their care. But along with that, passion was need. So as the Medical College of Georgia, you and your team of colleagues there, innovating, developing, building primary care, family medicine, right there at the Medical College of Georgia. Other medical professionals finding out about what you all were doing, having you get with them so that you could help them start a developing and building process. Did you begin to see any improvement when it came to the primary care that so many patients needed? Were we beginning to make a significant dent in that huge, huge problem of not enough primary care? Or was that something that just remained just as challenging as it had ever been?
Well, the challenge is still there. But we were on a downward curve, and we were moving rapidly on that downward curve. I think that downward curve has stopped. And there's a slow rise out of that pit of deficiencies as it relates to primary care and especially family medicine. The discipline has grown substantially over the time that I have been a faculty member at the Medical College of Georgia. It has had substantial impact on the workforce, and the problem right now is that it's just still not quite big enough. But that is a thing that opens up the door for other opportunities. And in fact, even in our setting, you know, we have built a primary care infrastructure that's academic, but we're also building primary care opportunities within our health system that never existed there before, because even in this very highly specialized environment, there's an understanding of the important role that primary care plays from an educational standpoint, from a service standpoint, and from a scholarship standpoint. Primary care also has the ability to kind of be the voice, if you would, of the science that's being created in an environment like the Medical College of Georgia. I have patients coming in all the time. They've Googled on the internet and things of this nature. They found something, and they want to know whether or not that particular study has impact upon them, yes, because they have that same disease process. And when offered the opportunity by the college to be the voice of the medical minute on GPB, I jumped at that opportunity, not so much because I thought I could do it. I just didn't want it to miss the opportunity to be able to be the voice that translates very high-level research, cutting-edge research that's happening at the medical college, into a language that people can appreciate, so they understand that medical progress is a medical discovery is a process, and that these building blocks are being put together day by day by day, and that they are not just being put together by some scientist in New York City or over in Sacramento. It's happening daily right here at the Medical College of Georgia. That helps them to have a better appreciation of the basic science that's behind all of the tools that I take into my office as a primary care doctor to take care of the patients that I serve.
That is so awesome. And this is something you mentioned, the Medical Minute, and the fact that it airs on GPB. Is this something that's airing on a weekly basis?
Yes, weekly basis. It's on Saturdays and Sundays, and it airs twice.
Okay. And you get an opportunity, like you said, to educate. And you're right. So many people are going online to find out as much as they can about what's happening with them so that they can have some say-so. And I could see this as being just such a great fit for what the Medical College of Georgia, again, pioneering, have been doing with their patient family-centered care. That whole concept of listening to the patient and the family members of the patients instead of just always talking to them, letting them have some say-so as to what's going on with their care, since it's their bodies, their well-being, that's the focus.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that a lot of what has happened at the Medical College of Georgia, not only in the Department of Family Medicine, but in primary care in general, what has happened is that we have been able to be a part of the change that I think is going to occur within the way that we train our students, the way that we provide them opportunities for primary care education and things of this sort, looking at innovative ways in which to start them early in their career on a primary care path, and using the platform of the entire state as our classroom, looking at physicians' offices, looking at residency programs across the state in primary care, looking at our partners throughout the state to be that valuable resource that we're going to use. Now, if you kind of look at this and kind of think about that, you remember when I talked about what happened in family medicine about 35 years ago that we distributed to the entire country?
Right.
Well, that's the platform. So although we can't take full credit for any of that, we do know that we had a part in building that conceptual framework that makes it possible today to build the sort of community engagement that is necessary to ensure that primary care education, primary care service, and that primary care research occurs within the academic environment of our state's medical school.
And as you see this continuing to grow and develop, and you're talking with other physicians, other educators, medical educators from across the state, even across the country, does it seem like we have reason to be optimistic that all of these reports that we get about the shortages of primary care physicians in rural America, urban America, is a need that's going to be met, or does it seem like it's going to be an uphill battle for some time to come?
It's going to be an uphill battle, but we're getting better at it. I am very, very optimistic, and if I did not see that we could do this, I wouldn't be here. It's going to be a struggle that may take another 20 years to address, but we're going to get there. And had we not started this process 35 years ago, I can't even imagine the status of our healthcare environment had not the primary care infrastructure had not been supported by people like us at the Medical College of Georgia, as well as our colleagues in academic health centers across the country who were doing the same thing. So we've turned the tide, and I think if we can get our national government to recognize that what we truly need is a healthcare system that treats healthcare as a right for everyone, we have the resources necessary to put this in place, because you're going to build this on the backbone of primary care, an effective primary care enterprise that's appropriately resourced with the men and women to do that kind of work.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we have our work cut out for us as well. We need to let our elected officials know we are counting on them to help us with this process. Dr. Hobbs, thank you so much for joining me today. Very enlightening and inspiring conversation, and wishing you much continued success with all that you're doing as you continue to not only help to lead the way, pioneer, innovate at MCG, but as you help to build this medical system, particularly when it comes to primary care and family medicine all across the country. Ladies and gentlemen, be listening out for the Medical Minute on GPB, Saturdays and Sundays, 90.7. Be back in a few. And ladies and gentlemen, when you see Dr. Joseph Hobbs in the near future, feel free to congratulate him. As of Thursday night of this week, he has received the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Medical College of Georgia. Congratulations to you, Dr. Hobbs, for a job well done and for continuing to push to make things so much better for so many. A living legend and a pioneer of pioneers, Dr. Joseph Hobbs.